out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 30th of July, 2019. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. Well, we've got a special guest with us today, someone we haven't heard from for a while. I think the last time we heard from him, he'd just written a book and he'd just been doxxed. And I think he had quite an important role in the council at the time. And he came out as an open white nationalist, which is always something commendable for people to do. And I believe since then he's kept to that position. He's stuck to his guns. And I'm talking about a young man from Maine called Tom Kaczynski. Tom, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Sven. Thanks for having me on today.
Was that correct, my appraisal of you there?
Close enough. I mean, I would say more broadly that I'm a nationalist, but I am the only choice you'll have in the Republican Party who is willing to speak out for the rights of white people. And I think that the time is coming where the Republican Party needs to admit that it needs to be a pro-white party and make sure that we have the same rights and protections that everyone else has. Because unfortunately, in America, we are under attack and those attacks are only accelerating.
So that's what you're currently doing, is it? You're standing for the Republican Party?
I am. Yes, I am challenging Donald Trump for the presidency of the United States. And more than anything, I think one of the really important things of this campaign is I want people to understand that the issue isn't just illegal immigration, but legal immigration and what the demographic replacement of the traditional American population will mean in terms of political consequences. I don't think most Republicans realize that we are bringing in 85% of these people from the third world who are voting well over 70% Democrat in the aggregate. And just to put the numbers in relief, that means an advantage of about 400,000 votes every year based on our current immigration policies could be added. And in reality, it looks like the number is close to 200,000. So you just can't do that and hope to maintain any semblance of what your country used to be about. And so I'm going, if you want to think of it that way, as an emissary from the dissident right to mainstream conservatism, explaining that the values that we care about, that people need to become aware of, are mindful of this. Or America will be a one-party state that looks much like probably a third-world republic like Venezuela.
What are the demographics like in Maine then? Is it a fairly white state? Have you got problems with immigration there?
Maine is 94% white, which makes it the whitest state in America. But our problem is less demographic or cultural than it is political. We elected a Democrat governor with a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate, and a whole bunch of money is coming in from outside the state to try to bring migrants up here. And we recently, the mayor of Portland actually kicked out some of our own homeless people up here to bring in Congolese migrants that had crossed the borders claiming they were seeking asylum, but we believe they're economic migrants for a lot of different reasons up here in Maine. And it's causing a lot of controversy and a lot of anger because promises were made by the Democrats that, you know, any money that was going to be spent was going to be for the benefit of Mainers, and unfortunately it's going to bring in new people. And I think a lot of people are starting to realize there's a deeper agenda about population transference and demographic replacement, which is a good thing, because one of the problems you end up with in a place that's still very homogenous, which Maine is that people don't really have an understanding what's happening nationally in a lot of ways, because they don't feel the impacts of what immigration's doing up here the same way you would say if you lived in New York or Texas or California.
Yeah, this seems to be the problem. Unless you actually have the juxtaposition of the blacks and the non-whites there, people don't realise what it's all about, and they don't realise just how different these peoples actually are from us. I mean, is there a sense of community among the whites that these non-whites are an other and they're a threat, or are the people there sort of being very welcoming to them and thinking, oh, it's okay, it's just a few of them? You know, what's the general feeling about all of this?
It's really divided. I think you could honestly say half the people are being very welcoming, not having a deeper understanding of the cost of this. The other half of the people are mad, but not really from a racial perspective, more from a general fairness perspective. And I think that's the way Maine looks at things. You know, I think there's a deeper cut on this, which is that Maine has a very specific, unique sort of culture. And I think what has rubbed people the wrong way is the argument being made over and over that we must convert how we live to reflect their way of life. I don't think that people are so mad about the origins of the people as they are about these cultural issues that are resulting. I mean, because we have people coming from the Islamic world, we have people coming with very different values. And so what we're finding up here is that the conversation, as it goes to that level, which I think is one that people are more prepared to argue about, is becoming vehement, because really all the left is doing whenever these comments are made about what people believe and how they're behaving is that you get called a xenophobe and a racist. And so what is happening is that it's up here, as you would see in many other places, there's an accelerating sort of awareness of the racial context of the struggle coming ahead, that in reality, the white position, the pro-white position, is a reactionary one that's being forced upon us by the fact that basically, there is a national consensus to attack whites, where the Republicans won't offer any defense, and the Democrats are going to push this to enact an agenda which people otherwise would not support. And that was one of the things that drove me into this race, was that I wanted to be out there to say, hey, you might not want to talk about identity politics, and you might not want to think of things from a racial perspective. And, you know, I'm okay, believe it or not, with a meritocracy, but that's not what we're getting. Things are very different, and we need to talk about what the consequences of this are and recognize that while race isn't everything, it isn't nothing, and it is something that's really important for people to understand. Otherwise, what's going to happen is the replacement numbers, the people we're immigrating, America will become a one-party country by 2028, and at that point, our only options will become much more challenging.
What do you think the chances are then of you getting this message out, of you getting some publicity? Is there going to be a chance of you debating any of the other contenders? Are there other people putting their hat in the ring for the presidency in Maine, or are you the only one? Just you know, what sort of publicity do you think you're going to get?
Sure. So really, the way I kind of approach this is that I do a lot of work in my state, and I'm sort of infamous here for trying to speak against the population replacement agenda, and that I will be working to expand the message. But really what I'm hoping for is the dissident right, alt-right, whatever you want to call it, was probably about 10-15% of Donald Trump's base. And I know the guys are still out there. They're still listening. And even though things have gotten quiet in a lot of ways, they understand the bigger context of the fight we're having. I'm hoping to start there, marshaling support, so that if I can get some polling where I get 5-10% in a Republican primary, people who understand that we need to stop immigration, people who understand the importance of ending the Fed, people who understand the larger context of what's happening, that means I can get on a debate stage with Donald Trump, and I can make, for the first time perhaps ever, national recognition of the hard numbers of what's impacting us here in the United States. So it's going to be a slog, and it's going to be a haul, and I'm going to pick a lot of fights, and I get attacked a lot for doing so. But out there, there's not right now any serious opposition to Donald Trump. And one of the problems that means is for 2024 is that there's no one to even take up the mantle of nationalism in a meaningful way. The Republican Party will be happy to wait him out and then run someone like Marco Rubio or Nikki Haley. And what we need to do now is redefine the right, because the left will not allow this, as the nationalist party, and that if the debate goes between people who represent a harder culture-based form of nationalism that is race-aware versus the sort of civic nationalism, we will pull the party into a position where we can at least be aware of the challenges ahead. So my hope is that I can do this, you know, in terms of reaching people, but my campaign is set up to go viral, and it's set up basically – the way we grow is that we say things that are true, we call out things that are false, and we continue working at this, and I am not the most radical person by any stretch of the imagination, but that is actually probably one of the assets of this campaign, that I can go out there and present a very reasonable argument, and I am very good at networking. So this campaign just started this month, but we're going to make it much bigger. Check out my website at endthecon.com. You can see what we're doing. There's a book on about it as well. And realistically, I've put out there the policies that are needed to save this country and to begin restoring Western civilization. So, and I won't pretend I have everything in there that's necessary, but we need a hard stop on the agenda as it's going, and we need someone who will actually push us in the right direction, which I am sure Donald Trump will not do, because his first 3 years have not accomplished the things that were necessary.
So can anyone join the Republican Party or put themselves in as president of the Republican Party? Is that open to all Americans?
You have to be an American citizen who was naturally born, which has usually been interpreted to mean born in the U.S., of at least 35 years of age and a member of the Republican Party. That is to say, your registration must be with them. But assuming you meet all of those criteria, you are eligible to run for president.
And then is it the members of the Republican Party that then vote for the leader of the Republican Party, or is it the general population?
It is complicated. So I will try to give a 2-minute explanation of how the election process works, just for the purposes for people who don't know the details. Your question is a good one, but it's not as simple as saying A or B, because it's a combination. What happens is the party itself designs the process by which the public that consists of either its members or as open members decides state by state how they're going to allot delegates. So there's two general ways that this happens. One is a primary, which is like a general election. You go and you vote for anyone whose name is on the ballot, and whoever gets the most votes gets either all of the delegates or some division of the delegates, depending on the state and how they apportion them. The other thing they do in some states is what's called a caucus, which where instead of having a secret ballot election, they have a sort of like a meeting gathering where you'll have, like, say 200-300 people in a room, and then they'll either raise their hands who they want to vote for, or they'll have a ballot in each of those things. But instead of being a private event, it's a public event, where the theory is that way you get people talking about the candidates. Iowa, for instance, which is the first state, is a caucus. New Hampshire is a primary. And in some states, they allow independents to vote in either primary. In other states, only Republicans can vote. And literally, for 50 different states, there's 50 different procedures. So it gets a little complicated. And one of the challenges of one of these campaigns is that you have to be ready to compete in as many states as you can. Now, with respect to this campaign, what we usually do in these processes is you compete the first 2 or 4 states, which will be Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, and South Carolina. And my goal is to go ahead and contest those states, and if the campaign gets bigger and is more successful, then I will go ahead and compete as far as the people will allow me to go. And I think that, there's a message here that a lot of people want to hear. Even amongst regular Trump supporters, most of them actually prefer my platform. They just aren't ready to make the jump yet. And so what I'm hoping to do is gather some early adopters who will help push these ideas, because it's not good enough for us just to win the ideas battle. We need to go ahead and get some political power somewhere. And that's one of the emphasis points of my campaign, that we're going to talk about ways to take away the cultural oppression we're facing, stop the wars of censorship, fight against demonetization, antitrust against big tech. There's a lot of different things we can look at. So that's where this is going to start.
So really, you're going to be wanting people to join up to the Republican Party so they can vote for you, so they can support for you, all that sort of thing. So that would be a good idea, would it, if any of our listeners who haven't yet joined?
Helpful.
Okay.
Absolutely. It would be very helpful if people are registered Republican. And keep in mind, in no way does that preclude you from voting whoever you want for the general. If whoever wins the U.S. process is a two-part process. So whoever wins the primary will face the other side or end all the independent candidates in the general. So it certainly doesn't preclude anyone from supporting someone in the general election. But what it does do is allow us to continue the efforts that we began with such good effect in 2015 and 2016 to transform the Republican Party. And for those who understand American politics, the nature of our two-party system and the single district voting we tend to do is such that it is much harder here to have a viable third party in other places. So my proposition is very simple, that we take over the Republicans. You know, Trump represented a door opening. It's up to us now to ram right through that door and make it the party that will give us a chance to survive in the future.
Are you still involved in local politics at all, or is it, are you just concentrating on this?
I am, actually, and I've been attacked by TV media the last few days for having a local event, you know, just a picnic to have Mainers gather to oppose the placement of migrant refugees up here, and I have been slurred and slandered with every name you can imagine. But to the credit of the people of Maine, and to, as testimony, I guess, to my own networking abilities, we've now grown our group nearly 60% in the last 3 or 4 days, and we have a group with well over 300 members of people now who are working to oppose Maine being made into a sanctuary state, as well as to begin developing a sort of awareness within our locality of our culture, our people, and a willingness to defend them. I tend to put things in a much more moderate light because of the need to work with different types of people. But functionally speaking, what I am doing up here is building a basis for something that could become an independent state. And I think within the American context, something I'm going to talk about a lot during this campaign, which I think will be very interesting to your listeners, is that we need to gain legal power, we need to gain governmental power, and we should do it within our states. And there are a lot of rights under the 10th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution a state can claim for itself, and frankly, which have been usurped by the federal government. And as the federal government becomes crazier due to the changing demographics, if we control certain states or move them in directions that are friendly to us, that will give us a much better chance of surviving the future and having at least some places where the ideas we value come to fruition.
Well, that's really encouraging to have 300 or 400 people behind you already, you know, supporting a righteous cause. And then getting the publicity. I mean, that's great. I mean, this is what happens when the mainstream media attack us. It basically, it's just publicity for us. It just gets us supporters. You know, I think the more, you know, they do say there is no such thing as bad publicity. And I think that is so true as far as nationalists are concerned. Can you tell me some more about this local activism that you've been involved in?
Yeah, sure, Sven. I'm happy to do that. And you're absolutely right about the media play on it, because what people see is someone makes a reasonable statement, which is what we usually tend to do, and then we get attacked totally out of proportion for it. But about 2.5 months ago, I started an organization called Maine for Mainers, which had a very simple premise. The old state motto of Maine, the unofficial motto anyway, was the way life should be. And people have a very particular way they like to live. And Democrats came into power promising that they were going to deliver on that. And when they didn't, and instead just took what their donor money from Brooklyn and from San Francisco said they were supposed to do, which is change it to be just like California or Massachusetts, what I was able to do was I reached out and I started saying to people, hey, we don't have to take this. And I'm somewhat infamous in Maine because I was the guy who said, well, you know, we are a state that's overwhelmingly white. How can you claim to want to protect us if you go around saying how white people are to blame for everything? And that's what ultimately got me fired. But people respect up here, at least some people, that I was willing to stand up for that. And so what happened was kind of a funny deal, but it was actually some dirty laundry. We've been growing this group at a nice steady clip, probably adding 5 to 10 people a day, and we have a monthly meeting. We had a meeting scheduled for this Saturday, and what happened was a bunch of letters were sent out anonymously to these neighbors saying that there was going to be some white supremacist picnic. And the media picked this up and accused us of sending them. We did not send them, in fact. And in fact, the story gets even worse. They claim some black family got them and was offended, except the problem is there's no black family that lives on the street in question. So you can see how the story fell apart in 100 different ways. And as it did, what ended up happening was the left looked really bad, and they came to our meeting anyway to try to disrupt it. We had armed Antifa outside our meeting, but we're a bunch of country homesteaders up in the sticks, and our guns were bigger than their guns. So nothing ended up happening, and the police came down just to provide some background support. But we did have a very successful meeting, and what we are starting to do here is build our own beginning of what will eventually, I think, be an independent political movement to recognize that Maine's interests are need to be defended, and it will be defended within the context of the American state. But if the American state moves away from its guarantees of the Bill of Liberty, or excuse me, the Bill of Rights and the liberties contained therein, that we actually are creating the foundation for an alternate entity to arise. And I think that is something, a conversation people need to start having. You know, obviously in America, we'd like to hold it together. We'd like to see our nation, you know, together. I mean, I wouldn't be running for president if I didn't believe in the possibility. But the reality is, unless the voters themselves act in that way, the Constitution is no suicide pact. And I think people need to be thinking and organizing locally. So our goal is to hit 500 members here within the next month or two. I think we'll do that. And then we are going to begin fighting the political process. And I will tell you that our strategy is very simple. We are going to take power away from the politicians, which we can do because there's a referendum process up here, and we're going to give it to the people. So we trust our people to make better decisions than the politicians who are elected for them. And we believe that given the chance, they will vote to not allow this to be a sanctuary state. They will vote to defend and strengthen their liberties, and in time they will punish those politicians who lied. And we're going to work at that. And I think the other side has a healthy respect for me because I've been a manager of a town before. I've done these things. I've managed multi-million-dollar contracts, and they know that I am a real threat to them, which is why they attack me constantly. But the problem is, like you said, it doesn't help them if they attack me, if what I'm doing is popular. Someone doesn't have to like me or everything I say to understand the things I'm supporting are in their own interest. And I think Mainers understand that. And with every more ridiculous attack they take against me, I get that much bigger. So as you said, I am grateful for it, but we have something really special cooking up here. And I will say, for people who live in America, you know, one of the things that's so important is to be in a place where you think you have a future, and your future isn't your economics. I mean, that's just your day to day. Your future is your people. It's a culture. And if you are someone who's not happy where you're at, you know, Maine has a really good culture. Yeah, our politics suck. We have leftist liberals for the same reason Sweden did what they did. But people here are starting to awaken. And honestly, this was kind of where it started for us in North America, up in the Northeast. And I think people are going to be really surprised what starts to emerge up here in the coming years.
So you're really sort of concentrating on keeping Maine for the Mainers rather than keep America white or anything like that. You're concentrating on Maine, and it's like just like something else that it just happens that everybody, the majority of people in Maine actually happen to be white. But the important thing is you want to keep it for Mainers, people that have lived there all their lives, whose ancestors lived there, that sort of thing. Yeah.
That's absolutely it, Sven. I mean, I I think nationalism is a complex topic, and I think, you know, it has three parts to it. I think it really does have a civic component, a cultural component, and a kin component. And what that means is, you know, you obviously want to have a high degree of homogeneity. We all understand that. Your audience does not need to hear that. But it's more important. The other parts are also important. You need a set of laws you agree upon, basic principles to unite you, and institutions that defend those. And I think those are the parts where we've really been losing, you know, and you can see, because theoretically, from the ethno-state perspective, Maine should have all its problems solved. But it doesn't, because we haven't had a good articulation of the cultural fight. And so that's what we're learning how to do. And what we have found is that, at least in the American context, which is a little trickier than, say, in other countries, because we aren't a single ethnic identity here, even amongst the white population, which is sort of a reactionary development, that we have to articulate things in other ways. And people who like liberty, for instance, the idea that, you know, you should live self-sufficiently, as it works out, people who think that way tend to be white. And there are a few people who aren't. And I've always articulated what I call an 85% solution, which is that compared to the zero we're going to have, I will work for 85% all day, every day, which is what America was the first 200 years of its existence. So I think that is a more successful way to develop, and it solves the problem what everyone runs into if you're out there and you take the hard line, which is that everyone has a friend. Everyone has some grandkid or granddaughter or something. And if you force people here to choose between their actual blood relationships and a theoretical tribal affiliation, we lose. And it's a problem that we see, because a lot of whites who are very high agency won't touch the movement because of that. And while in an ideal world, I would admit that it would be easier if we had homogeneity, I'm more concerned with how we get to a world we survive in from the location we're at right now. So, and that's harder in other places. And what that means for America writ large is much more problematic. You know, for better or worse, America needs a Caesar. I mean, it's an empire, and I don't think we're going to go that way. I think, frankly, America's on a path to move towards being something like the old USSR if it doesn't collapse of its own inertia. So it's a hard spot. It's a difficult time. And my campaign, as evidenced by this conversation, doesn't shy from talking about hard issues. But what we absolutely need to do beyond getting control of immigration to stop the demographic transformation from being so rapid is to get control of our culture back. And that means, you know, not having 90% of the professors teach Marxism. It means not having, you know, 90% of the media controlled by six companies. It means not giving unlimited blank checks to the Federal Reserve. It means fighting and tearing down most of the institutions of America. And honestly, what would probably equal out to a governmental reset. And I know how hard that is to accomplish, but I'm making that argument because the alternative is we either collapse or become some terrible version of ourselves. The realist in me thinks that that's probably what's going to happen. But this campaign is an awakening call for a great many different people, whites, Christians, conservatives, constitutionalists, a lot of different people who don't understand the underlying facts. And so I go out and I make the presentation and hopefully awaken people to the dangers. And I've done so in a way that I think a lot of people can relate to, where the one thing that I think gives me an edge is I was a Republican for many years and have been, and I've been in these different groups, and I kind of exist between different worlds and can kind of connect the pieces where we won't agree on everything, but the right has been so bad at agreeing on anything. And what we need to realize is we're not just individuals. We need to work collectively and to develop a collective that's able to work for our common defense against people who are very good at utilizing law, power, networks, and money against us. Because if we think we're going to face them one-off or just win an argument and win, it doesn't matter. We need to start winning in place. And so I work at both levels. I work at the national level to educate people, and I work at the local level much more vigorously for our own survival.
Yeah, I think one of the problems America has is that it's so huge. And as you say, it's like an empire. You try and get a nationalist spirit there and people think, well, white nationalism. But nationalism itself is based on these small ethnic nations. If you look in Europe, you've got the British, you've got the Welsh, you've got the Germans, you've got the French, and they're all ethnic nations. And you can appeal to their history and their sense of cultural identity, and that will bring people together. But when you think of America, it's just so big and so disparate. So I think you got the right idea there on concentrating on Maines and Mainers, and Maine having its own unique cultural identity, its own way of doing things. And you can appeal to that, and that will inspire people to join you. So from what I can see of it, you've got two things really going on there. You're trying to unite Maine and sort out your own immediate area and inspire your own comrades in Maine. And at the same time, you're also hoping to try and do something for the greater area in America by taking part in this presidential race. I mean, both of them are very commendable ideas, and I really wish you all the best with it, Tom. How can people help you out with this? How can people get hold of you?
Well, thanks, Sven. I appreciate that. The easiest way, you can send an email to tom@endthecon.com. Endthecon.com is my website, and you can find us at Endthecon on Facebook. You can find me at Tom Kaczynski on Twitter and Gab. And if you're curious about any of the ideas, please feel free to take a look. My books cover a lot of these things, and we are going to continue pushing it forward. And the biggest thing I always ask people to help is let people know it's happening. I know people don't have a lot of money. We're out there fighting for it. I don't expect that. I do expect that we can go ahead, meme away, be honest, be vigorous, and, you know, try to start winning things back. So I want to thank you very much for having me on, Sven.
You're welcome. And thanks to Neil as well for actually putting you in touch with us here. And hopefully we'll have you on again to let us know how everything goes. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Carolyn Yeager. God bless and hail victory.